D-Mace, Finn, Ginnandonic, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A huge game for the Vanderbilt Commodores coming up this weekend at Alabama, and we will talk plenty about that matchup over the next couple of days. But let's turn our attention to the other SEC team in our state, the Tennessee Volunteers. They're off this week. They escaped Starkville with an overtime win against Mississippi State over the weekend. UT is back on the field at home October 11th against Bobby Petrino.
Can you believe that?
And the Arkansas Razorbacks. Bobby Petrino.
He is the head coach. And are we all visualizing the same thing right now? Bobby Petrino, head coach, Arkansas.
The neck brace.
Tell me the next thing that... Exactly.
Oh my
exactly.
Goodness.
The neck brace.
The neck brace and the red nose that was nicked. Oh,
yes.
Boy.
Hey,
man.
Oh,
boy.
Yes.
But he's our man.
Can never keep him down. It's going to rise.
If that doesn't prove that second chances do happen.
Exactly.
Holy
man,
God.
Second, third.
At the same school, 12th. The motorcycle. The girl.
It happened at your school.
Welcome back, Bobby.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Welcome
back,
Bobby.
That was pass eight.
Yes. So Tennessee will be back on the field not this coming Saturday, but the following Saturday against Bobby Petrino. And the Arkansas Razorbacks. Hoo boy. So, Willie, you and I were talking about this the other day. With Tennessee, a lot of Tennessee fans were concerned about the game at Mississippi State. We talked to Chad Withrow. He was nervous. I have to imagine Robbie Stanley might have been a little bit nervous. If you're a Vols fan, let's be honest. You were nervous about that game. And it could have gone wrong. But the Vols won. They're 4-1. 1-1 in the SEC. And I'm looking at the remainder of their schedule. They come back from their off week against the aforementioned Razorbacks. They are at Alabama and at Kentucky, followed by a home game against Oklahoma, home to New Mexico State, at Florida, and then home to Vanderbilt to wrap up the season. So, Willie, the question that you had, I'm paraphrasing here, is the path to a college football playoff spot for Tennessee perhaps the most advantageous remaining in the SEC?
Well, I think I have a theory that I'm going to get to. And I would say, yes, I think the Tennessee Vols have an excellent pathway and maybe the perfect schedule to get into the playoffs. Now, seeding and all that stuff, I don't know. League championship, I don't know. But really, it's all about getting into the playoffs, right? That's where it all starts. You can't win the national championship until you get in. Mm-hmm. And in this year in the SEC, I was watching First Take this morning, and they did sort of a macro thing with Paul Feinbaum was in there, Heather Dinich was in there, and they were sort of assessing things right now, which, and it's very, very early. But they were sort of looking at heavyweights, the very, very top teams in the Big Ten look like they have emerged, right? In the SEC, it's kind of a shuffle. You're not exactly sure who's at the top. You don't have these juggernauts that seem to be far and away better than everybody. For example, now it's Ole Miss's turn to be towards the top of the rankings.
They're already 3-0 in the SEC, Ole Miss.
Yep, they played some, so they've survived a couple of games early. They've got some good wins. But do we think they're going to be undefeated at the end? I don't think they're going to be undefeated. I think this league is going to show that if you get through with one loss, that's a heck of a year. But all that to be said, I think there's going to be a lot of teams knocking each other off. Mississippi State is a good team. They impressed me. I didn't think Tennessee went down there and played bad. They made some mistakes, but They also caused some turnovers. They scored a couple of defensive touchdowns. And I think there's going to be a lot of dogfights like that in this league, a lot of swing games. And no matter who you're playing, you better bring it every week or you could get beat. That being said, look at the schedule that Tennessee has compared to some other schools, and we'll use Vanderbilt as an example. Vanderbilt is the extreme. You mentioned this yesterday. Vanderbilt has what, the second toughest schedule remaining in the country?
Correct. Vanderbilt has the second toughest remaining strength of schedule in the country, according to ESPN. Tennessee is 23rd in the country in terms of the hardest remaining strength of schedule. The only two SEC teams that have an easier road are the Georgia Bulldogs and the Ole Miss Rebels.
Okay, so let's take it week by week for the Vols. They've got the one loss, but it's not a bad loss. As long as Georgia continues to be a good team, which I think they'll be a good team. I don't know if they're as good as they've been the last few years. But Arkansas, I don't think there's a line on that game yet. Maybe we can find it. Tennessee is going to be a big favorite over Arkansas at home. Then at Bama, that obviously is going to be a huge one. But I would argue that Tennessee could lose one more game and still be in a pretty good spot for a playoff berth. If they're sitting at 10-2, they've got Kentucky at home. They'll be a big. Or, I'm sorry, Kentucky at Kentucky. They'll still be a decent favorite in that game. Kentucky is struggling right now. They're not a gimme, but relative to the rest of the teams in the league, that's a game you've got to win. They get Oklahoma, who right now is ranked fifth, but their quarterback, John Mateer, has a broken throwing hand right now. They may well play that game, and Oklahoma may not have Mateer. I know they're going to try everything they can to get him back in here, but it's his throwing hand. It's not his non-throwing hand. And so I'm not sure how effective
Oklahoma,
he's going to
by
be.
The way, is discussing the possibility that he could be back for the game against Texas, which is next weekend. Not this coming Saturday, but the following Saturday.
So I guess the issue is, does he have a surgery?
He did have surgery.
And they think he could be back for Texas? It's his throwing hand. Well, I mean, so I guess that's a to be determined.
Yes.
Right? And the game is in Knoxville to start with.
Basically what I'm saying is I wouldn't rule out John Mateer playing against
Definitely
Tennessee.
Not, because we still have about a month before that game happens. So yes. There's a lot that could happen between now and then for him. But if I'm Tennessee, I'm like, bring it on. Bring Oklahoma. They will hit, that's a chance to get a really good quality win at home. Then it's New Mexico State, Florida in the swamp, which is never a gimme, but Florida is really struggling. And then Vanderbilt, we'll see where Vanderbilt is at that point after going through the gauntlet that they've got. But I think Tennessee has got a schedule that I think hits two things. It's just tough enough to where the committee isn't going to say, well, that's a weak schedule. Because it's not. But it's not the toughest schedule within the league. You could find, like Vanderbilt, I'm sure, is sitting there going, if Vanderbilt goes, let's say, 9-3 somehow, I don't know if that could happen. That might be a best case scenario. But if they were sitting at 9-3 and Tennessee was 10-2, or let's put it this way. Let's say Vanderbilt is 8-3 going into Knoxville and Tennessee is 9-2. I could argue that that game might be for a playoff spot, a de facto playoff spot. I would love to see that if I'm Vanderbilt, but you see my point. Tennessee, though, at 10-2, it's really going to put a test, I think, to the committee's their whatever you want to call it, their policy now that has changed, that they're saying it's not going to be as much about wins and losses. It's going to be about strength of schedule, your quality wins, all of that stuff. But I think Tennessee's schedule is just tough enough. It's a perfect storm developing for Tennessee if they can take advantage, I think.
Here's something interesting, Derek. So ESPN has its football power index. It's really fancy, and I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I trust it. So maybe I'm blindly trusting it. But I isolated the football power index to the SEC because they have a playoff percentage, which is the chance for a team to make the college football playoff according to the playoff predictor. Alabama is at 69%. Ole Miss is at 68.5%. Vanderbilt even is at 42.6%. Tennessee is at 29.2% to make the college football playoff. I don't know how ESPN came to that conclusion, but the fact that, I mean, I would be curious how this algorithm determines that Vanderbilt has a better chance of making the college football playoff, has a better chance than Tennessee, considering Vanderbilt's schedule is significantly tougher than Tennessee's. But I found that to be interesting, that they gave Tennessee a roughly 30% chance of making the playoff.
I think what they're telling you is, in their mind, they think Vandy is a better team. Now, whether that's the truth or not, that's not for me to say. But when your percentage or your predictor is for Vandy 43 and it's 30 for Tennessee, and Vandy's schedule seemed to be harder at the tail end than it is Tennessee, that's telling me they believe Vandy at this moment is a better team. Now, Vol fans, Vandy fans, y'all can argue that all y'all want to, but that is what they are saying, that as of now, based on, you know, the schedules moving forward, is that Vandy has a better chance at making the college football playoffs than UT. I think here's one problem from UT, is that they play these three games, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt. Right now, they're all ranked. They got to at least win two of these three ranked games. Florida, they got to win. Kentucky, they got to win. New Mexico State, yes. But I'm saying number 10, number 5, and number 16. Because to me, if they lose to Oklahoma, looking at Oklahoma's schedule, Oklahoma has a tough schedule, like a tough schedule. So if they don't beat Oklahoma and Oklahoma ends up losing the bulk of their games toward the end, that is not going to look good for Tennessee. It's not. I'm just looking at the strength of schedule for these teams that they're playing. If they beat Oklahoma and Oklahoma runs the table, that's a good win for them because Oklahoma stays in the top 10 more than likely. They may be a top 5 team depending on, you know, looking at their schedule and seeing all the teams they have, top-ranked teams they have to play. So out of those three games, they got to win at least two, and I think that the most important one is that Oklahoma game to me. Because Oklahoma right now, they're ranked 5th. But their schedule is a gauntlet.
Yeah, so what will they be ranked?
Exactly. What would they be ranked?
Yeah, and then what
during that week, yeah.
Right, and I would say that we have to probably not pay as much attention to where a team was ranked at the time, but it's going to be more about what has that team done by the end of the year when the committee is making that final push and say, okay, here's everybody's resume. They beat Oklahoma. Okay, so what is Oklahoma? Is Oklahoma dipping 8-4? Mateer's hurt. He can't play. They slip. Maybe that win doesn't mean as much as it could have otherwise. But I'm curious because in theory, most years in the old system, you go 10-2 and you go 2-1 against Alabama, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt, the three ranked teams you have left, and you don't slip up. Chad Withrow is the adage that Chad Withrow says, if you look at Tennessee, they've had the one slip up on the road in Heupel's tenure that has cost them a couple of times. If they can avoid that, like it was Arkansas last year, it almost happened last week against Mississippi State. If they can avoid that, 10-2 usually gets you in.
One texter on our text line says, I think it means, meaning the football power index and Vanderbilt being ahead of Tennessee and the playoff percentage, I think it means that Vandy completely controls its own destiny. They don't have a loss in the SEC yet.
when you played one game out of eight.
Yeah. Tennessee,
obviously you control your own destiny.
Tennessee
doesn't quite
control its own destiny. They have to hope other teams lose too. One texter, Remington, says, we'll find out who's better after Thanksgiving. Derek is just a hater.
Why am I...
You're a hater.
What's his name again?
Remington Steele.
I tried to keep it mutual here with the whole. I'm just telling you what the number, what the index says. This is not Derek's index. This is ESPN. So ESPN is the hater, not me.
Did you guys watch Remington Steele?
That's a great 80s reference. I never watched it, but I remember the show.
Yes, I watched
that show. That show was on before I was born. Yet.
Good. Your head.
Dang, I
know about it.
I'm sorry.
And by the way, I'm looking to see what an early line on the Arkansas at Tennessee game is. And I mean, I'm just going to random websites, and all of the lines I see are double digits, like 10.5.
Yeah, that's one that they need to hold serve. Tennessee looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm curious with Tennessee fans. Do you see what I'm seeing here? Is this the right schedule, right year, with all that's happened to them? With the whole Nico drama and what they've overcome, they have an opportunity here, I think, because in the league, in a year where it seems like to me, everybody's good. Like, going to Florida will not be easy. Now, I don't know. They might have an interim coach. They've got a quarterback that is talented, that played great Lagway at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. He's been really erratic, but you know he's capable. He's shown it, right? And he's still young. So Florida, I'm sure at that point, is going to be thinking, we can spoil Tennessee season. So there's no gimmies, but that's what's going to be really dramatic. But I do think in the year, if you could choose your schedule, I think Tennessee's got a great schedule for playoff berth.
Remington, by the way, has chimed back in and says, I love Derek.
Well, thank you.
You're a hater, but he loves you.
Thank you, Rick.
That's the way it should be.
Love your haters. I love that.
That's right. 615-737-1025. Willie threw out the question, Vols fans. Are you seeing what he's seeing when he looks at the Vols schedule after the escape from Starkville over the weekend?
Why isn't Willie the hater? He the one that brought up this question, not me.
I brought up the question thinking that Tennessee's got a good path here if they could take advantage.
I don't think that's the way you really want to frame it, though, Willie.
It goes without saying that
Willie's
is
a Vandy grad, too.
Have you seen his diploma?
That's what I'm saying. So why wouldn't Willie Remington be the hater?
I want to stoke the flames. What I really want, I would love for that Vanderbilt-Tennessee game to have the kind of spotlight that I think it could if Vanderbilt can have some success. Like I don't think we should get ahead of ourselves here.
Like they Coach were talking Willie about is coming up.
Coach Willie is absolutely.
He's at the table.
I mean,
exactly.
It's a gauntlet. They've got to get through Alabama, LSU, Missouri, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee. That's what's ahead of them. They don't have any gimmies in there. So to even get into discussion, I would be thrilled if they just get a couple in there. A couple big wins would be huge. But if they could just get a couple and have a lot on the line when they play Tennessee, that will be just great theater.
Diego Pavia.
Two quick texts. Greg says, for once, Willie is not the hater, I assume, when it comes to the Vols. Another texter says, I know Florida is down, but I will never overlook the Vols playing the Gators in the Swamp. This is from Blake. I'd circle that game as the Heupel away trap game.
Yeah, it could potentially be. You know, that game is always, you know, or at least it has been, one of those games you look forward to.
And that rivalry is going away thanks
and
to
they're
the
taking it away.
Annual rivals.
But, Willie, just channel your inner Diego Pavia, man. Like, just say, lace him up. Let's go.
Lace him up. That.
Unlike Diego, I have watched too many decades
he's
of Vanderbilt.
Diego hadn't
I'm
been
going
here
to
long
be
enough.
Measured. I'm going to be measured. I'm loving what I'm seeing. And I hope it continues. But this is their season is really just starting. Despite all, they put themselves in a great position to do great things. But they're 10.5-point dogs against Alabama. I was curious. They brought Feinbaum and Dinich on Mike Greenberg's show. They had the whole panel there. They talked about Alabama and their win over Georgia. There was not one member of the panel, not one word said, hey, they got a tough test against Vanderbilt. That was not mentioned at all.
That's good.
I agree.
By the way,
I was glad they didn't.
Absolutely.
You haven't.
Coach Willie's laying low in the weeds.
You haven't lived until you see Willie get turned. 615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich will join us coming up next. We'll ask him this question and more. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you each week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, before you came on, we were talking about the Tennessee Volunteers who escaped Mississippi State with an overtime win over the weekend. And Willie's theory is that in this deep and balanced SEC, the Volunteers' remaining schedule is favorable in terms of a path to the college football playoff. How do you see it?
I think Willie is right. I mean, a lot of it comes down to who you play and when you play them. And right now, Tennessee has that one loss to Georgia, but it was in overtime by a field goal, and I don't think the committee will hate that loss. Then you look at the rest of their schedule. They don't play Ole Miss. They don't play LSU, and they've got a pretty favorable schedule. Now, if they don't win the SEC, then they can lose one more game, finish 10-2, and as long as that's a tight loss, they've still got a good chance to make the playoff. Now, if they're able to beat Alabama, on October 18th, Then, if they don't win the SEC and they finish 10-2, I think that they will absolutely make the playoff, because it appears that Alabama or Georgia has a very good chance of winning the SEC, although Ole Miss may have something to say about that. But it lines up so that the schedule presents a lot of conference wins, and it removes a couple of games that could very well be conference losses because they just don't play those teams. So I think Tennessee has a very good chance of making the playoff as long as they take care of business and don't lose any more than one more game.
Well, Trevor, let's skip on over to the other Tennessee team, and the Titans, that is. Obviously, it was bad this weekend. Everybody saw it that was watching. I know some people probably even turned it off. It was that bad. But after that, in the press conference, Cam Ward, and I understand his frustrations, and he has every right to be frustrated, chose to express himself with some colorful words in regards to describing, you know, how the team has played. And a lot of people loved it, and I understood it. But my thought was, I wish he would have chose other words, because when you're the leader of a team, you have to be measured. You can be frustrated. I've been around a bunch of leaders, really good to great leaders. And even in the time of frustration, they always found a way to say the things without making it worse. And I think with Cam, again, I don't begrudge his frustration at all. He should have it. But I think when you're the leader, you have to be careful of what you say, because you don't want what you say to become the story. And obviously what Cam said became more of the story than anything.
Derek, I agree with you there. And it's not a matter of expressing how he feels. It's a matter of effectiveness in what he says and where he says it. And the way that he says it, he's got to have more sophistication than that. I mean, to refer to the team, I think this is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As derriere or glutes, maybe. Glutes, yes. Yeah. And see, so there are a couple of problems with that. One of them is in the locker room. You know, it's one thing to say that we're not playing well, but you've got to be very careful to not be seen by your teammates as throwing them under the bus in public. And a lot of guys, they're all wounded right now, man. It's awful to lose. And it's awful to lose the way they've been losing. And for their team leader to be perceived as throwing them under the bus is not a good look. And it doesn't make things better in an emotionally fragile situation. And I would say that, you know, it would have been better if he would have just taken responsibility for his own mistakes, if he would have said that, you know, the team as a whole, we need to play better, we're going to get back to it, and then go after the team in private if he wants to. And even that's a little bit difficult because, you know, he's a rookie and hasn't won a game in the NFL yet. So he's got to be very careful how he presents that. I mean, as you know, Derek, I mean, you're a whole lot better off saying that, hey, we're not playing well, than to be saying you're not a good player. Those are two different things, and you don't want to give your teammates the opportunity to interpret somebody as, or something as, saying in public, hey, they're not good players. You've got to be careful about that. So that's the team side. Mm-hmm. The other side is you don't want to give the public more ammunition than they already have to ridicule your teammates. And there are a whole lot of people, especially in this day and age of the vicious and cruel internet, that are going to take those quotes and turn them into memes and have great, delicious joyfulness in pointing those at the players of the Tennessee Titans. They're already going to be hating on the Titans. And there's no reason for the team leader of the Titans, at least the public face of the Titans, Cam Ward, to give them really delicious, juicy ammo. So to be frustrated, yes. To believe what he said is true, fine. But the way he expresses that in public, he did not do it the right way. And it doesn't just hurt the team from a PR standpoint. I think it doesn't help the team emotionally to pull together as a unit.
Trevor Maddich is with us from ESPN. So, Trevor, we all know that right now the whole building's on fire, right? Everything is chaotic. They're trying to figure out how to keep it together with the whole vision of, from the top down, we've got to get Cam Ward through this in one piece to where we don't ruin him. Don't want to be the next on this long list of teams that have messed up quarterbacks who were thrown into a tough situation. So if they brought you in as a consultant, what are the things that you might be talking about with them to say, here's how I want to get you through this fire?
I would start by running the ball more, even if it's not working well, and throwing the ball a lot more to the tight ends or to the running back. I mean, people say Tony Pollard isn't that good of a receiver. He had 41 catches last year and 55 the year before. So there are things that he can do from a standpoint of a pass receiver that don't require him to bust through the defensive line in order to get out into open space. Same way with the tight ends. Chig is starting to do a bit more. You know, you've got a good young tight end from Texas that's giving you a chance to have some things developed there. The wide receivers are not doing a very good job. They're not getting open, and they're dropping the ball about 10% of the time. And so they're not helping. So you've got to find other ways to do things. And if those things don't work very well, that's okay. What you don't want to do is say, okay, well, gee, we got to put everything on Cam and do everything we can to have Cam win us the games and have him develop a bunch of bad habits and have him lose his confidence. That would be the worst of all things. So this season is still about developing Cam Ward. And part of that is making sure that he's in position to succeed as much as can be succeeded, given what's going on. I mean, he's pressured more than any other quarterback in the entire NFL. And that's partly the line, it's partly Cam. But either way, you don't want him in those situations to develop bad habits, even if you're not doing everything extremely possible to try to win the game while exposing him to developing those bad habits. So first thing I do is I'd say run the ball more. You're running the ball pretty well. I would say throw the ball more to your tight ends and to your running backs, and then go from there. Because I don't think there's anything they can do to turn it around from a standpoint of winning games. What they can do is put Cam Ward in a situation to where he can progress, even if the team is not going to the playoffs.
Here's an example, I think, of what comes up, what you're talking about, Trevor, and it's been asked about a lot this week, but there have been a couple of third and longs, third and 12, where against a front like the Texans, they know they can't block up a play to have a great chance. They know they're going to take heat. So they even ran the ball a couple of times in that just to say, you know what, we don't want to get him killed on this play. And I understand that. So when they are in those types of situations, that to me is going to put this to the test, is because you have to take the criticism of admitting that you can't block up plays when it's third and 12. You can't protect your quarterback, at least not right now, until you could get Latham back, et cetera.
Yeah, and you know, the hard thing about that is that then you'll be criticized as coaches for not doing everything you can to try to win football games.
Exactly.
Right? And so you're in a catch-22 here. So what do you want to do? Do you want to do everything you can to try to win football games at the expense of the development of your young quarterback? Or do you want to maximize the development of your young quarterback at the expense of maybe not putting him in a difficult situation that he might succeed in from time to time? And that's a difficult place to be. In the moment, the answer is easy. Do everything you can to win the game. But I think in the trajectory of the next 4 years or so of the Tennessee Titans, the most important thing is to develop Cam. And I'm not saying don't try to win football games. What I'm saying is don't put it on him to win football games when it makes it worse for him in every other way.
How do you feel about trading Jeffrey Simmons? Because that's another thing that fans are like, wait a minute, they're lacking good players. Why would you trade your best player, especially that he's the guy that's playing well right now? But in the moment and in the big picture are two different things. So how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm torn by that. But I think in the situation they're in now, I think trading him now would be a good thing, especially the way that he's playing. I mean, if they had A.J. Brown, wide receiver, still, and he hadn't gone off to the Eagles, and or if Burkett had done better as his replacement, and then if you had had Derrick Henry here to complement Cam Ward, then, yeah, you would think, okay, having Jeff Simmons here and all that stuff is good together. But what they've done in allowing those two to leave, A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, you put yourself in a position to where it doesn't matter what Jeffrey Simmons does this year or next year, he's not going to help this team get to the playoffs and make noise in the playoffs because the team isn't good enough around him yet. And at least that's the way you have to consider things. And so by trading him now, preferably to a team that will give him the most, which is a team that is in position to make a playoff run if they were just a little bit better against the run. The Ravens are a team like that. Kansas City is a team like that. Strangely enough, even Philly is one of the worst teams in the league at yards per carry allowed on the ground. I mean, these are teams that would probably give you more because maybe they're that piece away from a Super Bowl championship. They might think so. And so by doing that, instead of wasting the last several years of Jeffrey Simmons' prime before you're ready to help him, you're allowing him go off to a place to where he can have a chance at a ring, and then you're bringing in the best possible compensation to draft young players to be able to build for the future. So once again, I mean, fans would get mad because you're saying, well, don't you want to win now? Yeah, I want to win now, but there's also the balance of the future of the team. Look at what Green Bay did at the quarterback situation. They had Aaron Rodgers, a future Hall of Famer, playing at an MVP level, and they chose in the first round his replacement, Jordan Love, instead of bringing in a guy that could help Aaron Rodgers win another Super Bowl possibly. They drafted his replacement to develop. Well, in the short term, that was not the right thing to do. But in the long term, it looks like it's working out very well. And you can make a case for both sides. Well, I think you can make a case to get as much value as possible for Jeffrey Simmons now. And fact of the matter is, if they trade him to a contender, they'll be doing him a favor.
Trevor Matich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He is brought to you each and every week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. We're going to sneak in a Predator segment coming up next. The Predators open the regular season a week from Thursday at home. But there is a situation happening with the Predators that is starting to get national attention. And we will discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. We are brought to you by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. The Nashville Predators open the regular season a week from Thursday at Bridgestone Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Predators fans, a programming note. Our weekly conversations with Barry Trotz and Elliot Freeman resume next week. Barry Trotz will join us Tuesdays at 5. Elliot Freeman will join us Thursdays at 5. So 1 week from today, our first of many weekly conversations with Predators general manager Barry Trotz. And who knows, a week from now, when we sit down with Barry Trotz, we may be asking him, where the hell is Luke Evangelista? Because Luke Evangelista is still unsigned. He is a restricted free agent. He has not been on the ice at training camp. In fact, he has since returned to Canada to train on his own, as he awaits a resolution to this contract stalemate, this contract quagmire, if you will.
Well done.
Giggity.
Not that quagmire. I was waiting for somebody to do that. So this story is starting to get some national attention. Frank Saravalli, a well-known hockey insider, worked for TSN, worked for Daily Faceoff. I believe at the moment he is a free agent. Tweeted this earlier today, quote, "Today is day 13 of NHL training camp. Can anyone explain why the Predators don't have a deal done with Luke Evangelista? Does not compute. Let's shake hands on 2 years times $3 million, meaning $3 million per season, and get one of Nashville's few players under 25 in camp," with a shrugging emoji. Now, Barry Trotz gave a statement to Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean about the negotiations. Trotz said, quote, "Collectively, both sides are disappointed Luke is not signed and with our team. We are not going to negotiate in the media. We are optimistic and hope we can get Luke signed and rejoin our team in the near future. In the meantime, we are excited with our camp up to this point, with our veterans leading the way, and very excited about the development of our young players." So, Willie, you and I have talked about this, not just on this show, but on Preds Insiders, by the way. Preds Insiders tomorrow at 6 o'clock, right after DVD. And I am still, you know, to sort of discuss what Frank Saravalli said in that social media post. It does not compute to me how the Predators are at this point. I think Luke Evangelista is a solid player. He is not a needle mover. I'm not sure how much the Predators are going to struggle without Luke Evangelista. But we'll see if the Predators and Evangelista can come to terms on a contract that has him with the team when they open the season at home a week from Thursday. But where do you stand on this? I know we've talked about this a couple of times, but where do you stand on this right now?
Well, I'm going to try to present some detail here on both sides of the why is it here? Why have we gotten here, right? Both sides. Because you can hear like the astonishment in Frank Saravelli's voice, right? Now, Adam, you and I assessed last week, and we had Mike Kelly on from SportLogic, and he assessed Luke Evangelista's value. Not just, to me, you have to look past the goals, assists, points, right? You have to look at analytics. You have to look at the context of the season. What is his role? And that, to me, is where you try to find the sweet spot. Mike Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, said somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 million per year on a two-year deal would be fair in his mind. And that is cross-checked. I saw a second reference, capwages.com. They have projected cap for Luke Evangelista at 2.51. So I think it's debatable. I don't think it's as simple as Frank Saravelli saying, hey, 2 times 3, done deal. So let's look at Evangelista's season last year. And look, I'm the first to say they need to get him here. He needs to be here for them to be the best team that they can be. He's an important part of their team. But you used a really good phrase, needle mover. Last year, he was coming off a very good rookie season in which he had 38 points, and he helped the team overachieve to get to the playoffs as sort of a complimentary. You described him as a middle six player. Do you think that's accurate?
Yes, meaning a second or third line player.
Yeah, and a guy that can score some, and he's a good playmaker. He's got great hockey IQ. He sees the ice. He knows the system.
And he's on the cover of Nashville Lifestyle magazine.
That doesn't hurt.
One of Nashville's most beautiful people.
Most beautiful people.
Doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if that factors into negotiations.
Look, let's just put it this way, along those lines.
I would ask for a bump.
He's a popular player.
Yes.
With a certain section of the Predators fan base.
And
that
look,
skews younger and female.
He is a great personality with the media. He is engaging. The players like him.
He's got great hair.
That's coming from the three of us.
Exactly.
You know, come on.
Have hair.
Everybody does compared to us, but
exactly.
He's got
true.
A real flow. He's got the lettuce, no question about it. Okay, so here's his season last year. Okay, he made $791,000 last year
on his entry level
on his entry level contract. So if he were to get even $2 million or just over $2 million, that's like 150% raise. And he's coming off a year where he had 10 goals and 22 assists. But let's break that down a little further, okay? The first 39 games of the season, basically half the year, he was healthy, scratched a couple of times. And the season, would we agree, kind of slipped away in the first half of the year.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's when they really needed to be at their best, and it unraveled. He had 4 goals, 10 assists, 14 points. Was he alone in the struggle? No. Everybody struggled. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure from his agent's side, he's going to say, look, he wasn't alone. But if I'm the Predators, I'm saying you want a big raise. And in the first half of the season, that really was the defining part of the season when everything was on the line, his production dropped big time. Is that fair to say, Adam?
Yes.
Do you disagree with any of that?
Did they move him from his first year to his second year? Did they move him? Like,
in other words, was he playing the same role?
Yeah, was he playing the same role?
I think he was playing the same role that he was playing.
Okay.
He was in the middle six. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was just one of a gazillion things that was just not working the way they hoped it would work. It just didn't work. Then here's the thing that nobody really seems to bring up when they're talking about this. He got injured January 7th at Winnipeg, and it was a pretty significant injury. And I don't know for a fact, but you could, by judging, looking at the videotape and things like that, it looked like a high ankle sprain to me. And from there, he missed a bunch of games. Then he came back for a couple games right before the Four Nations face-off. The dad's trip was in there. He played a couple games. Then they had the long break. And before the long break, they decided to shut him down again. So he was not fully healed. Comes out after the break, and it took him a while to get going. So the next 15 games, he had only 2 goals and 2 assists. So all that to be said, the first 54 games of the season, he's got 6 goals, 12 assists on the year. He did finish the year on a really nice run. 14 games to end the year. 4 goals, 9 assists, 13 points. So that makes the end of the season in 68 games look better, right? And those games count. Those are NHL games. So, D-Mace, what would the agent say about the value of the last 14 games?
Well, if I'm an agent, I'm saying, listen, my player got healthy.
Exactly.
He was healthy toward the end of the year, and you saw how he played when he was healthy. That's what I would say.
That's what they're going to say. No question about it. And they're also going to say, see, he produced. You put him with better players. He was healthy. That's the player that he is. And that's what the agent should say. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, Adam, I think the team would say, look, when the season was on the line, he was ineffective. He was a healthy scratch a couple of times. And I'll ask you, Adam, you give an honest answer. How would you value production in the last 14 games as opposed to the first 39 games where it was before he got hurt, right? So the injury, I'm taking the injury part of this out, which is basically 2 months. It was a tough injury for him to overcome.
I hear what you're saying. The issue for me is, under normal circumstances, let's say the Predators were in a battle for a playoff spot down the stretch of the season, and Luke Evangelista had a strong finish to the season, even if the Predators missed the playoffs. Think about the year, I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head, when Barry Trotz even said we were basically fielding a minor league team because Roman Josi was out of the lineup, I believe. Mm-hmm. Matt Duchene was out of the lineup. Philip Forsberg was out of the lineup.
That was John Hines' last year, right? 2 years ago.
Right. So if Luke Evangelista had a strong end to the season and the Predators were in the playoff race throughout that, I would put more stock in that.
And Evangelista played very well during that exact time when he just had come up.
But with the season was lost so early, it's harder for me to quantify. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And because I'm just trying to project why I think there is a difference of opinion on his value to the team. Because I do think if you break up his season last year, I think the Predators, and I would hope Luke Evangelista would say, I wish it could have been better in the first 40 games. As you use the key, is he a driver? Is he a needle mover? Has he proven he could do that? And at the end of the day, I'm sure a lot of people are sitting there going, what's the big deal between 2.5 and 3? You know, it's not that big of a deal on a 2-year deal. So some people would say, hey, just give him the extra $500,000.
$500,000 is a big deal.
But on the other side, if you are arguing on the management side, you're saying just take the deal, bet on yourself. If you're as good as you say you are, you're going to get an opportunity. This lineup is such that if you're playing well, he's going to get the playing time. He's going to be in there. And if he plays well over the next couple of years, that's when he's going to make the real money.
But my thing is, didn't the salary cap just go up?
That's another thing that I think is muddying the waters and making this a little less clear, is because everybody has much more money to spend. And so the agents are saying, percentage-wise, everybody should get a bump. You've got more money. Mm-hmm. Everybody should get a bump. You just saw Kirill Kaprizov, who is not the best player in the game, just get $17 million a year.
Biggest contract ever.
Good Lord.
Biggest contract ever in the NHL.
He's getting more than McDavid, more than Draisaitl, for now. But that's resetting the bar, and everybody's saying, well, everybody should get up there.
Yes.
So that's why this is a little more complicated than meets the eye. All that to say, I don't know how this is going to end up, but I think from afar, I see people saying nationally they've got to have him. They don't have anybody else. But I think from the management side, they're seeing guys like Reed Schaefer, Joachim Kemmel, Matthew Wood, and they're saying they're kind of excited about this group that is probably not ready to make a big dent now, but are they willing to, in this year where the season could go a lot of different ways, see what they've got in these young guys? Ultimately, everything is riding on the young crop, Brady Martin, Matthew Wood, Tanner Molendijk, Reed Schaefer, all of these guys that they've been marinating for a couple years that are still really young, a couple years younger than Evangelista. That's what they see as why they, I think, are willing to wait it out a little bit with Evangelista.
615-737-1025. Your Predators thoughts. The Predators are on the ice to start the regular season a week from Thursday at Bridgestone Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Of course, we will be there. I believe all of our programs will be at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, next Thursday, that is. Again, programming note, Predators fans, Barry Trotz will join our show weekly starting Tuesday, a week from today, at 5 o'clock. Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet will join us every Thursday, starting next Thursday at 5 o'clock. 615-737-1025. All right, coming up next, it's time for our somewhat regular Cam Ward vibe check. We haven't done one of these in the regular season. We did one right, if I recall correctly, we did one right after he was drafted, one at the end of the preseason. We are now four games into his NFL career. We're going to do another Cam Ward vibe check. So you can tell us right now, 615-737-1025, how you're feeling about Cam Ward. We'll break it all down. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.